Hello and welcome to this week's edition of In Accord. Let me start with an exciting announcement. Last week, the Ministerial Board of Directors had a teleconference with our administration to discuss the possible construction of an education center next to our headquarters office. We've been considering this project for more than 2 years. Our administration has done more than its due diligence, and with our financials in hand from last year, the board unanimously approved the construction. Mr. Franks wrote to us earlier this week, "More than 2 years ago, in August of 2022, I proposed to the Ministerial Board of Directors that our finances coming out of the COVID pandemic made it possible for us to build an auditorium/education center on the remaining 3 acres of our property here in McKinney, Texas. This was part of our original plan when we built the office back in 2018. As for the office, the church paid cash for the property and then took out a mortgage for the building. That was indeed a leap of faith for us as a small organization which was just getting its feet on the ground. But God blessed us abundantly during that 2 years of planning and construction, and within 1 year of completing the office in 2019, we paid off the mortgage. The church was debt-free at that point, and we have remained that way ever since. Today, with 4 out of the past 5 years showing increased income, our amount of available cash has also increased. With no debt and a very healthy cash reserve, we are in a position now to add the second building to our property. Its outward appearance will be very similar to our current office building. The seating capacity of the auditorium, as drawn, will be 466, but there will also be 3 additional rooms that can be used for overflow, bringing the total capacity to over 600. There will be a separate section for Foundation Institute that will seat 48 students at tables. This section can be closed off so that classes can be in session while other events are taking place in the auditorium. And by moving FI to the new building, we'll free up an additional 1,000 plus square feet in the office that will be converted to accommodate the growing needs of our media department. We envision that this new space will be used for equipment storage, a second studio, offices, and workstations for employees. The MBOD believes this will be a very useful tool for the church in fulfilling its mission, and we are very thankful that God has provided the means for us to carry through on this project. Now, last week, I returned from a long pastoral trip through French Africa, with a stop in London on the way to spend a Sabbath and to speak. After London, my wife and I flew to northern Zambia via Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. We missed our flight connection in Addis, and so we had to spend the night there while we waited for the next flight the following day. It would not be the only missed connection on this trip. We were traveling to Zambia so that we could visit some members new to our association who live on the border in the southern part of the Democratic Republic of the Congo. The part of Zambia into which we flew is called the Copper Belt because of the large deposits of copper that have been mined there for decades. We flew into Zambia because it's much easier to enter Zambia than the Congo. It's expensive and time-consuming to receive a visa to enter the Congo, and that nation has one of the worst airline safety records in the world. In fact, 13 Congolese airlines are forbidden from flying anywhere outside of the country because of their poor safety record. About 50 people have died in 20 different air crashes in the past 25 years in the Congo. Zambia, on the other hand, does not require a visa for entry on a U.S. passport. One can simply fly in, show a U.S. or European passport, and be stamped into the country. International air service is safe and timely, so we flew into the city of Ndola, where we spent 2 nights. People who live in the border area are allowed to cross the border with their ID card as long as they stay within a narrow band running along the border. So we were able to meet with members on the Zambian side. We hired a car and driver to make the 3-hour drive north to the border. We suffered a flat tire in the town of Kitwe and found that our driver's spare tire was also flat, so we had to wait an hour while he went off to find a new tire. We finally met the small group at a local restaurant near their homes, which are located in Kasumbalesa. We greeted each other and sat so that they could tell us their story. They had come to the Church of God through a different association, but found that the church elder, I'll put that in quotes, who was assigned to them, was a dishonest man. He tried to compel them to lie about church expenses, exaggerating them so that they could all pocket some of the money. When they refused to lie, they were expelled by the dishonest man. They began looking for another association of the Church of God and eventually contacted our pastor in Lusaka, Zambia, Mr. Kambani Banda. Since this little group speaks French rather than English, Mr. Banda eventually put them in touch with me. So we discussed the work of our association and what we would be able to do to serve them. They were very happy to contact people who would do their best to serve them honorably and honestly. We've put them on our mailing list, and we will add them to our pastoral visit list as well. From Zambia, my wife flew home via Johannesburg. I preferred not to have her accompany me to Burundi, my next stop, because of the security situation there. The United States State Department has four levels of threat in its travel advisories. Number one is exercise normal precautions. Number two is exercise increased caution. The third level is reconsider travel. And the most serious is do not travel. Burundi as a nation is at level three. But Cibitoke province, where almost all of our members live and where our church service would be held, is at level four. This is a region where three countries meet: Burundi, Rwanda, and the Congo. It's been plagued by war in all three countries over the past decades. In fact, almost everyone here over the age of 30 has been a refugee at least once. Here's what the State Department says about Burundi. Country summary. The possibility for political violence exists throughout Burundi. Police and military checkpoints are common and can limit movement. Police may search private homes for weapons. The borders may close without notice. Violent crimes like assault, carjacking, home invasion, grenade attacks, and armed robbery are possible. Criminals may target foreigners and residents suspected of having large sums of cash. Local police lack the resources and training to respond effectively to crimes. Medical services in Burundi fall well below United States standards, and there are no adequate trauma services in the country. Emergency medical and fire services are limited or non-existent in some areas of the country, so even relatively minor health problems may necessitate a medical evacuation at the traveler's expense. Medical evacuation insurance valid for travel to Burundi is strongly recommended. The U.S. government has limited ability to provide emergency services to U.S. citizens throughout Burundi. U.S. embassy personnel are subject to restrictions when traveling in certain areas of Burundi and may be subjected to other constraints as security conditions warrant. These restrictions include limitations on all travel outside Bujumbura Mairie during hours of darkness, typically 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. And here's what they write about Cibitoke province. Do not travel. Armed actors exploit porous borders and forested areas between Burundi, Rwanda, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo for movement and activities. U.S. embassy personnel are restricted from travel to the following areas without special permission: the provinces of Bubanza and Cibitoke, and Kibera National Park. Due to travel restrictions on U.S. embassy personnel, the U.S. government may be unable to provide emergency services to U.S. citizens in these areas. I read that to you because we have hundreds of brethren living in that region, a region that the U.S. State Department says is too dangerous to safely visit. Sadly, they don't really have any choice in the matter. Their family plots are there, so there they have to stay to tend to their farms. On top of that difficulty, in terms of per capita GDP, Burundi is the poorest country in the world, and by quite a margin. So that's why I didn't want my wife to travel with me to Burundi. I took Marjolaine to the airport in Dola mid-morning so that she could start her trip home. Then I waited back in the hotel until mid-afternoon when I went back to the airport and took a 40-minute flight down to Lusaka, the capital of Zambia. I had to wait there in the airport for 7 hours until my 2:10 a.m. flight took off for Addis Ababa. That flight lasted 4.5 hours, during which I slept about 2, until we arrived in Addis at 7:30 in the morning. I had a 3-hour layover until my flight to Bujumbura, where I arrived at noon on Friday. During the drive from the airport to the hotel, I noticed long lines of cars in front of gas stations. So obviously the gas shortage that I'd encountered last time had not been resolved. At the hotel located on Lake Tanganyika, I was shocked to see that the water level had risen by some 12 feet due to heavy rains. Flooding is a serious problem in the country at this time. Sabbath morning at 7:30, the son of our local pastor arrived at my hotel with a Toyota Land Cruiser, a driver, and a pastor from just over the border in the Congo. He wants to be part of our association with his small Sabbath-keeping congregation. He spent the day with us, observing and asking questions. On the drive up, we stopped on the side of the road to buy some black market gasoline. The black market rate was $25 a gallon, but we had no choice if we wanted to be able to attend the church service. Because of heavy rain, certain sections of the road had been washed out. I was happy that we were able to have a four-wheel drive vehicle. About 400 people attended the service. I spoke on the topic of Christian commitment, and my sermon was translated phrase by phrase into Kirundi, the local language. Following the service and some fellowship among those who spoke French, we drove back to Bujumbura. I was thankful to arrive back into the relative safety of the capital city. On Sunday, I met with our pastor, Nathan Mukeshimana, and his son, Melkiad. We spent much of the day going over our church policy manual, which I put together to guide our church leaders in French-speaking Africa. It covers things like how church services are to be organized, basic financial accounting, how holy days are supposed to be conducted, and so on. I read through the whole thing, stopping to explain and underline various points, and then answering questions. After we finished, I invited them for lunch. Melkiad ordered pizza because he had never tasted it before, and by the way, he liked it very much. Monday, we met again to discuss leadership development and the importance of training our replacements. I covered several documents that our administration has prepared about how to identify candidates for the International Leadership Program and how that program operates. Developing leadership is a challenge in Africa, Nathan told me, because there are practically no examples in their societies of the kind of leadership taught in the Bible. We discussed the conflict between pride and humility and how difficult it can be to replace the one with the other. I explained to Nathan that we would rather have a man who is less capable in speaking or in some other physical domain, but humble and willing to cooperate rather than the other way around. We spent several hours on this before we ended for the day so Nathan could make his way back up to Chibitoke province to his family. We shook hands, I asked God's blessing on their work, and I encouraged Nathan to communicate with me at any time if he had questions or needed advice, and he said he would do that. I was supposed to continue my travel on Thursday, but Kenya Airways canceled the flight, so I had to move up my departure day and fly to Nairobi on Wednesday and spend the day there. My ongoing flight was not until Thursday night. I hadn't spent a full day in Nairobi in several years, so I decided to visit some of the attractions that I hadn't seen in years, or in some cases ever before. I spent a few minutes at the Animal Orphanage, which is part of Nairobi National Park, where orphaned animals, when they're found in the wild, they're brought here for care and to be eventually reintroduced into the wild. A short drive from there took me to the Giraffe Center, where rare Rothschild giraffes are protected and are part of a breeding program to increase their numbers. It is a pleasure for people of all ages to hand-feed the giraffes from the viewing platform. Finally, I spent a few hours in an attraction called Bomas of Kenya, which displays the different kinds of traditional houses built by the tribes of Kenya in the past, as well as presenting various kinds of tribal music and dancing. Back at the airport, I had to wait until just after 10 p.m. to take a flight to Mauritius in the Indian Ocean, where I arrived at 3:30 in the morning. Flying in the middle of the night seemed to be a theme on this trip. I had to wait 6 hours in the airport before flying to Reunion Island for my next church visits. I spent the Sabbath with Mr. and Mrs. Podig. We caught up on all our news and we fellowshiped for hours. Sunday morning, I had a visit at my hotel with a new couple, new to the church, and then I was invited to the Podigs for lunch, which we ate in the treehouse that Mr. Podig has constructed for his grandchildren. The view is splendid, and the air movement was much appreciated in the tropical heat. Monday afternoon, I flew back to Mauritius, where I spent the week working in my hotel room. On the Sabbath, I held a service for Mrs. Saloni Prodigue and Mrs. Suzanne Laroche, our two widowed members on the island. We sang hymns together, and I prayed before giving a Bible study. And then after that was over, we talked over vanilla perfumed tea, a specialty of Mauritius, and cookies. Among other things, we talked about how their Feast of Tabernacles was in 2024. There were just the two of them, so they rented an apartment on a seaside, and they had recorded sermons to listen to in French for each day of the feast. I usually visit these ladies twice a year, and they really appreciate any time that we can spend together. The next day, I flew to Kigali, Rwanda, via Nairobi once again. My residence permit was about to expire, and I have to keep it current for the church to be recognized by the state, a frustrating process on which we are still working. I flew from Mauritius to Nairobi, and after a layover there, I flew to Kigali, where I arrived about 4 in the morning, again. I slept a few hours and then went to the immigration department to request a renewal of my residence permit. It was renewed in time, but they would only grant me an extension of 2 months. So unless this process succeeds within that time frame, I'm going to have to return to Rwanda again to continue the seemingly endless process. We're legally barred from holding church services, but I was able to meet with some brethren in a private home during the Sabbath day. And that night, I started the long trip home, 90 minutes flight to Nairobi, a 2-hour layover, a 9-hour flight to Paris, a 4-hour layover, and a 10.5-hour flight to Dallas, where I was very happy to finally arrive. I hope you will keep these brethren in mind and in your prayers. They all face challenges. Many face solitude. Many live in very dangerous places. Many live in extreme poverty. And some are facing government opposition, which is very close to persecution if it isn't outright persecution. They are thankful for your prayerful support, and they pray for you. I hope we will also continue praying for them. We read in Hebrews chapter 6, verse 10, "For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister." One way we can all serve each other is to pray for one another. And God says he will not forget that service. Well, that's all for this week. Next week, Mr. Doug Horchak will present In Accord. He's traveling as I record this, and I'm sure he'll have some interesting stories to share as well. So for now, from all of us at the headquarters office, we wish you all a peaceful and refreshing Sabbath day.